Big show for you here today. Joel Smith joins me to break down the winners. I don't want to say losers. The winners and the guys who didn't quite have the weekend that they wanted at the NFL Scouting Combine. Plus, we've got some news and some rumors to discuss. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. Back from the scouting combine, back from Indianapolis, back in my little box where I belong, and joining me to talk a little ball, it is our guy, Joel Smith. Joel, what's going on, buddy?
I'm doing good. A little sad because of Breece Hall, the franchise tag today. He's on my main Dynasty League team, but an Indy native, so I'm glad that you're back at the combine. Great place to be.
Joel, I just want to say, I tried to warn you. I did tell you that the Breece Hall franchise tag was coming. So, and that was like that feels like 1,000 years ago at this point, because the combine and the Super Bowl, that might as well be 2 months all in of itself. I don't actually remember when this episode was in terms of human earth time, but hopefully there was enough time between then and now for you to harden your heart to the reality that Breece Hall, New York Jet 2026, that is a reality that we're living in.
I know. We'll get into it later, but he's one of my favorite players. He's so talented. He deserves better. So hopefully something happens down the line for him, but we'll see.
Yes, as Joel said, we are going to get into that later, because our final segment today is going to be lessons learned from the Indianapolis Scouting Combine from a news perspective. And again, we're just going to kind of cover some of the current events here. But before we get into what's going on around the league, some of the rumors that we're hearing, we're going to talk through, yes, it's a little ridiculous. It's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. We're going to do winners and losers from the scouting combine from a fantasy perspective. Who impressed us over the weekend, whether it was in the drills, whether it was in the actual on-field workouts. We're going to get into all of that here, because we are updating our thoughts on these rookies in real time as we head into April's draft. And let's start positive here, Joel. Let's get into the winners. And I think we got to start off with Kenyon Sadiq. And let me tell you what, Joel, I've got a little bit of mixed feelings on this Kenyon Sadiq thing, because number one, literally the first thing that I see as soon as I land on my return flight, I open up the Twitter, because, you know, what else are you going to do when you land? Text the wife, say, hey, I landed, made it. Then it's, let's see what's going on Twitter. I see Kenyon Sadiq just ripping up the combine. And again, part of me is like, hey, I feel really good about the fact that Kenyon Sadiq was a guy that we talked about on the show, I think basically in every episode, including an episode that we pre-taped for Mock Draft Monday next week, about, man, this guy's just going to rip up the combine. He's a freak athlete. So we got that right. The thing I regret is, though, Joel, almost all of the landing spots that we pointed out, like, hey, maybe he goes to the Niners late in the first round. Not happening. This guy tore it up to the point that I don't think he's going to be a late first round pick. 4.3940 at 6'3", 241 pounds. 43 and a half vertical. The broad jump was crazy. I mean, again, we knew this guy was going to be a freak, Joel. He put it out on the field at the combine. He is indeed a freak show athlete.
Yeah, just to put it into perspective, compared to past guys, fastest 40 ever by a tight end, 99.9th percentile vertical, broad jump. He's just small. And there's a couple other tight ends like this, but he is like that perfect athlete, just a little smaller as a tight end. But when we're talking about tight ends in the combine, out of any of the offensive positions, athleticism matters the most for tight ends compared to their production in college and lots of other things that we look at. It is a bigger indicator. So for him to go out in the combine and perform like he did, it does make sense now, like, that he is going to be drafted probably in the early first round, not just the late first round at this point. And there's a couple other guys, like I said, at the tight end room that perform really well at the combine as well. But Sadiq is just on another level right now.
Man, it was so impressive. And you're right to point out that athleticism can be something that really translates to success at the tight end position, which isn't necessarily true. Again, we're going to talk about some guys at wide receiver and tight end that showed off, and but that doesn't always wide receiver and running back that showed out at the combine. That doesn't always correlate to production at the NFL level. It's just kind of, we're checking boxes here. We're confirming, especially what we saw on film. But with tight ends, it definitely matters. It's funny, just to spoil the Kenyon Sadiq conversation that I have with EJ Snyder that's going to be coming out on Mock Draft Monday, less than a week from now, next week. I compared him like size, speed wise, sort of as EJ was kind of throwing him out there, to Vernon Davis, which I think is the other guy that ran that like crazy fast. Right now, Vernon Davis was over 250 pounds, and weight obviously does matter. But I still think, Joel, when I look at Sadiq, in addition to the fact that he is a freak athlete, and I know the production isn't crazy, but I think he's like pretty willing to scrap as a run blocker, which in our world today where we're saying how can this guy stay on the field for all the snaps, I think he at least does kind of check that box for me. What are your thoughts on just what you've seen from him so far?
Yeah, I would agree. And even though I was saying that he is smaller, he is still strong, just when we're going just off of his bench press and his percentiles there. And I did see you compare him to Vernon Davis. And when you're comparing him, you said, everybody's going to do this now. And since that point, I've seen like two or three other people post something about how he's like Vernon Davis in terms of his comparables. But the production, like you said, like it's a little bit lower. He is very young. So when we're talking fantasy, I would say he's most likely like a better dynasty pick at this point than he is redraft, especially like you talked about the landing spot in year one compared to like last year. Tyler Warren, 75 yards per game, about that mark. Same with Brock Bowers the year before that. Sadiq in an Oregon offense, that was good. Like, passes a decent bit. Only 40 receiving yards per game. Like, he wasn't necessarily the focal point of that offense, but he is, early declare, 20 years old and this athletic. So it might not be one of these guys that is going to come in and dominate from the get-go in fantasy, but down the line, I like him better as more of the dynasty prospect.
Yeah, and just thoughts, because I haven't talked with you about the class overall, just the strength of it. What are your thoughts on this group of prospects, especially when we're looking towards dynasty rookie drafts? Because kind of the general feeling is that, I don't know, not great, not the strongest class at the top. Give me kind of your overall look on this class, especially as we're talking about, hey, can Kenyon Sadiq be a top 10 rookie dynasty pick, even if he's not the most productive tight end? Maybe he's not productive early. Just kind of give me your general sense of what the class looks like right now.
I was kind of on that wavelength early on in the season in terms like this isn't as good of a class as, say, 2027 when we're talking fantasy football, not just an NFL draft perspective. But Sadiq, like you said, I've seen him as high as the 106 in dynasty drafts right now. I think the top five picks are all pretty solid. You got like one running back in there, one quarterback. But I've seen Sadiq as the 106 in a couple mock drafts or people mapping it out behind those top three receivers, Jeremiah Love and then Mendoza. So he can be up there. I wouldn't be shocked, just depending on where he gets drafted. If he does get drafted in that early first round, I wouldn't be shocked at all if he's going to 106, because I feel like it is kind of a mess after that. There's going to be a lot figured out after those top few picks. And even those three receivers, I think a lot will be dependent on where they land, just because they are so close right now. So after Love and Mendoza goes, it's going to be a little bit of a mess for a little bit. And then the back end of the first, at this point, who knows? There isn't a clear RB2. You can kind of put anybody in there that you like. And then the receivers, pretty solid compared to maybe what we expected a little bit ago, but still not this dominant receiver that we're going to have like next season.
No, yeah, I would agree with that view on the receiver class. And just when we're looking at Sadiq's draft range in the actual NFL draft, I mean, I think he could, in this class where there's not necessarily a ton of blue chip players. And I know the production is not great for him, but at the same time, Joel, like, NFL offenses barely know how to figure out how to use tight ends. They're getting better about it now. College offenses definitely don't know how to utilize like the traditional tight end. It's a lot more of the spread stuff. And you can get your occasional freak shows like Kyle Pitts in college or Brock Bowers in college. But that's kind of even Colson Loveland wasn't necessarily the most productive tight end. I'm interested to see more of like the data prospecting guys who I really respect, kind of their view on Kenyon Sadiq in that way. But just again, I think there's a chance he could get himself into the top 15 draft picks. So way outside of the range that we were talking about him last week, just after this workout. And again, so with so many teams moving these heavy personnel packages, you know, maybe not into the top 10, but if I just go like Rams at 13, I know they just took Terrence Ferguson last year. Could they be a spicy landing spot? Ravens at 14, they need a bigger body receiver. Could he be sort of that tight end too that eventually takes it over from Mark Andrews? Bucks at 15, I know they seemingly have a ton of pass catchers, but they might lose Kate Otten in free agency this year. Jets at 16, that's depressing, but I certainly think it's possible. Again, I just think that the range for Sadiq has certainly gone up from where we talked about it last week. He is definitely one of the biggest winners, but you mentioned running backs at the top of this rookie draft. The guy is obviously Jeremiah Love to talk about. As if he needed to be any more of a winner, he certainly put it on the field last week. 4.36 40-yard dash at his size, very impressive, Joel. I think he has to go down as a winner from this past week as well.
Yeah, I would agree. Like you said, like that's all he did. It's all he necessarily needed to do. A lot of these guys nowadays aren't doing too much tests, so he kind of knew he's going to run sub 4.4. Might as well go do it and show it. I wouldn't be shocked. All week before the combine, it was kind of like Jeremiah Love's going to get into that top 10. Now, most of where I've seen is he's not going to make it to, say, the Chiefs at pick 9. Like, he's going to be before that. I've seen lots of rumors about the Titans. So we'll see. But any guy being drafted that high, rookie fantasy, like, I know people have been burned recently, like Ashton Jeanty, Bijan. Before those two guys, it was like 7 or 8 straight hits from those guys that were being drafted that early.
Yeah, 6 foot, 212 pounds for Jeremiah Love, 4.3 at the 40-yard dash. And by the way, just because you brought it up, I do think, look, I love my time out in Indianapolis. I think the combine has its purpose. The combine's kind of cooked, bro. I mean, like, it's just so low participation. I still can't believe that people are throwing up, well, it's the fastest class that we've ever seen, fastest at this position. Yeah, the fast guys are the only ones that are running. I mean, we're going to talk about some guys who ran a little bit slower later on, but for the most part, it's just like, yeah, you know, out there, you can go rip a 4.4 or lower. Like, you're going to go run, and if you don't, then you're not. I mean, the three cone drill, RIP, Joel, the three cone drill, it's over. I mean, nobody's doing the three. I think one running back this year ran the three cone, which is so disappointing because that was like my favorite drill. For to watch guys go through, because I think it does show you some level of change of direction. So it's just unfortunate that what's happened with the combine. I wonder if the NFL, because they want to make everything a made for TV event, but certainly if you are prospecting for those of us on the outside, it's gotten a lot more challenging now that, like I said, essentially the combine, just like people don't participate. So I think we need to change sort of the ways we talk about the combine at this point because of that lack of participation. I'm with you, dude, that I think he might have, I ran through kind of a fake scenario in our last mock draft Monday about, well, what if he slips outside the top 10? There might not be, now he might not even make it to 10, you know? So if we get a situation where Jeremiah Love is a top 5 pick, because he's a winner in the draft, but he goes to a team like Tennessee or Arizona even potentially, do you have any worries that he could be Jeanty 2.0, you know, this great talent, but goes to a bad situation? So in a way becomes a loser for the fact that he was a winner.
Yeah, in the short term, yes, it'll depend on the offensive line. I think Tennessee is not the worst spot in the world. I think Las Vegas last year, it was worse than was even projected in the offseason. Early on in the offseason, it was like, this offensive line might not be too bad. And then it was the worst in the NFL in terms of run blocking. Part of that was because of injuries. But I think Tennessee wouldn't be horrible. Like, we saw what Tony Pollard did at the end of the season when they started getting a little things together. They changed the coaching staff, all that sort of thing. And even we've seen guys, like, I know there is Ashton Jeanty and Bijan, but there is also a lot of guys that were in bad offenses that did excel. Even though they were drafted very early and not the greatest situations, they just got the volume and had the talent and it worked out, the receiving. I think there'll be a lot of different things that play into it.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. And it's, again, it's tough to know because, like you just said, the Raiders situation, we probably didn't forecast it to be as bad as it was. But it truly was horrendous. Once we got into the season, you could tell that it was a pretty untenable situation from a run game offensive line perspective in particular. Okay, so those are two big names that were winners. Give me one of the maybe lesser names that you saw that might be a winner to you.
At the running back position, it would be Mike Washington. One of those guys was inside the top 10 of running back prospects and then just destroyed the combine. I've seen him all the way up to RB2 now. Like I was talking earlier, the RB2 is just completely up in the air. He came into this as like a early day three pick, round four, round five, and then just had the best combine ever. Part of that is because he didn't fully test. There was a couple that, you know, he didn't do, but the things that he did do was incredible. Top or 95th percentile or above in every single thing. He's got the size. That's the big thing. We're talking about Love, his 40 time at his weight. Washington, 4.33 at 223 pounds. Like, he is so fast for his size, and his vertical, his broad jump was also amazing. So he definitely rose up a bunch.
No question. That 40 at over 220 pounds is incredible. The explosiveness, really cool to see him get emotional afterwards. Even if, again, like we're saying, the 40 doesn't necessarily correlate to fantasy success or production at this position. Still, what it correlates to is getting drafted higher. And like, that was a life-changing moment for Washington. So that was really cool to see. I absolutely loved that. Boone had a great tweet about this. You know, he said he was hesitant to put Mike Washington on his sleepers list for the Thursday show that we did last week. Not a sleeper, because he's not a sleeper anymore, essentially. He's a household name, as Boone mentions, after that combine. I think he will continue to be. And that's the great part about this is that, yeah, this running back two spot, completely wide open. And I think there's plenty of teams, Joel, that will look out there and see that size and that speed and think, hey, maybe he's not a feature back in year one, but we can add an explosive element to our ground game. Even if Mike Washington himself said he was a three down back, maybe he's not that early, but with so many veteran running backs available in free agency, he could certainly be a complement to more of a steady grinder back that we get added here over the next couple of weeks.
For sure. He's got the size for it. He can be an all-around player. There is some things where his red flags are things that maybe don't show up in the fantasy world. So that's my worry, is maybe some fantasy people will value him a little bit more than, say, the NFL draft, because his two big weaknesses was his pass blocking and his fumbles. He had 12 fumbles, about 2%. That's like every other game he had a fumble. And not only is that not good just from an NFL draft perspective, but specifically for rookies. If he goes out there and he misses a block, if he goes out there and he fumbles, it's really tough to kind of be put in a situation where he can be a valuable rookie running back if he's just not being on the field as consistently.
I mean, listen, we have seen many rookies fail because of their pass protection issues and or benched because of fumbles, what have you. Specifically the pass protection, I mean, which is again ironic because he was supposed to be this great pass blocking back coming into the league, but you only need to look back to Travion Henderson last year and why that was frustrating for him to get on the field consistently, because the pass protection just was an issue all year long for Travion Henderson, and it held him back for large portions of his rookie year from a fantasy standpoint. So that is a really good note for you to bring here, as the Mike Washington hype train is definitely going to take off here. I'll throw out a receiver that I thought was a winner, and maybe this makes me a winner because I was super nervous about KC Concepcion's weight coming into the week. I was very concerned about what he would weigh in at. I was terrified he was going to be another one of these 185-pound, you know, jitterbug receivers that separate really well that I always fall for. Great measurables for him, 6 foot, 196 pounds. Didn't do any of the testing. So that's obviously, you know, did he put on some weight to come in at 196 and then not run, and then he's going to be lighter at his pro day and run a fast 40? Totally possible, but sometimes you just need to see that check in. He checks that box. And also, Joel, I thought he had a really nice showing in the gauntlet drill. The biggest question with him is the drops. I'm curious if you have any other notes on KC as well, because I'm a big fan, but the drops were definitely an issue. I thought he caught the ball really well. He kind of claps at it sometimes on film, but for the most part, I think it's a focus-based issue, and that showed like, hey, he was focused on getting it right, at least that day in the gauntlet. He looked really good consistently on the line. I'm pretty excited about what he showed us this past weekend.
Yeah, I know you've been high on him. He transferred to Texas A&M, produces well. I was wondering, because I know you're talking like he's comps, Jaden Reed, Stephon Diggs. After this week, does it kind of change in terms of your hope of he can be more than just more that gadget guy or slot guy or slot only in a league that is getting away from that a little bit more? Or is it more so going to depend on just his landing spot?
Definitely going to be dependent on the landing spot, but I think him being 196 It's like I said, he's somewhere between Steph Diggs and Jaden Reed. I think if he was sub 190, you're probably looking at him being closer to that Jaden. And I think Jaden Reed, as we talked about with Connor Rogers, Jaden Reed's a really good player. Just from a fantasy standpoint, he's not on the field enough to be a consistent every week option, even when he is healthy, because he's that slot only guy, as you point out. And I think Jaden Reed can do more, but it doesn't matter what I think, because the Green Bay Packers disagree with me. I think Casey Concepcion being 6 foot 196, looking like he was carrying the weight well, in addition to that, that probably puts him a little closer to Steph Diggs, who's another guy that's about 6 foot 200 pounds. So I think they look pretty similar from a build perspective. Obviously, now we have to see where he lands and what the role might be with that next team.
Yeah, even like an example, Steph Diggs, like when he was with the Bills, he did play a lot of outside receiver, but Texans, Patriots kind of had him as more of just that slot receiver overall.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, give me another winner in your eyes from this past weekend.
I would say Jacoby Lane. I know we'll talk about a lot of these, a ton of X receivers, and there's some maybe that didn't have the fastest 40 times, but Lane was a guy, 97th percentile in terms of his total combine, a 4.447 in terms of his 40 time at 6'4". So I feel like that is a little bit of a bump for him as an outside X receiver with the competition of so many other guys that are like him.
Yeah, Lane also really good showing in the gauntlet. I thought caught the ball really well, was consistently on that line. He's an interesting player, man, because I think he's a little bit stiff, but he does have the build-up speed from what I've seen so far. It tracks the ball well, I think, and is tough at the catch point. Just needs to certainly be refined as a route runner. But if we're talking about a guy who could go in the third or fourth round, the size and his showing this weekend was a nice, was some nice work by Lane. Maybe a little bit of like a sacrificial X receiver. But at times, Joel, Alec Pierce has been a little bit of that sacrificial X receiver, but just kept building up playing time, kept getting a little bit better. And then by year four, he has 1,000 yards on 47 catches. Lane is somebody to kind of monitor in that regard, as maybe he can just stick on the field in that way. I've got one more receiver to throw out before we get a few more in here. I have not watched Deion Burks at all, but I leave Combine Week being like, I can't wait to see what this guy's film looks like. Maybe it's terrible, by the way. I don't know. I haven't charted him yet. But number one, runs the 4.3 at 5'10", 180 pounds. 42 and a half vertical jump, 10 and 11 in the broad. Really good, just explosiveness there. Puts up 26 reps on the bench at 180. Now, I don't know, Joel, if he, I don't know how much bench pressing you're doing these days. I love the bench. I'm very into this stuff. I don't know if his reps look like Jordan Tyson's reps, which the NFL put out there. And those were some questionable. The reps were questionable. Nevertheless, still impressive to put up 26 on the bench no matter what. So it's questionable. But you know what? 26 reps of 225 is very impressive, even if you got to push it up with your chest a little bit, push up with your hips a little bit there. So I don't know what Burks' reps look like, but I'll tell you this. This guy's ripped, okay? Burks was just a true ball of muscle out there. So I can't wait to check out his film. I haven't seen any of it yet, so we'll at least be dialed in on Deion Burks coming out of the combine. So in that regard, he's a winner for me coming out of it.
Totally. He's smaller than me, so that's not good. I also cannot bench 26 reps of 225. That's a little bit different. Also cannot run a 4.3. But it'll be interesting. There hasn't been much fantasy success in guys like this. They're used in the NFL a lot. Obviously, they're not one-to-one. But it would be interesting if he can find himself in a spot, maybe a developmental spot, that can kind of eventually get him into some fantasy success too.
Yeah. I also cannot run the 40 in 4.3 seconds. And I'm much bigger than 5'10", 180 pounds. But anyways, Joel, give me a couple more winners on your end before we throw to break here.
One quarterback, everyone's talking about him, but it's going to be Talen Green. 9.99 on the RAS. That's the same range as like an Anthony Richardson, a Cam Newton. He's not the greatest prospect in the world, but it's not the greatest quarterback class. And if he is, for a fantasy sake, if he ever does get like a spot start or is developed into a guy that can play half a season or anything like that, he could be a guy that can be a starter in fantasy, an automatic start in super flex leagues just because of his rushing upside. The passing hasn't been as efficient, but just the rushing upside and being basically the greatest quarterback athlete ever. It gives them the hope. We see Anthony Richardson. Like, Richardson has not been good as an NFL starter, but when he starts, you play him in fantasy.
100%. I watched a decent bit of Taylen Green because Arkansas had two receivers in the draft last year, Isaac Tesla and Andrew Armstrong, who didn't even make a final roster. So glad I spent the time on that one. And I thought his film was actually better than that, which is a shame. But anyways, so I saw a good bit of Taylen Green. I haven't watched him any of this year, but it was very up and down, certainly in 2024. But the athleticism was real then. You could see it. And he's just somebody that's very interesting from that 4-3-6 perspective. So definitely somebody to monitor there. Talk to me about Eli Stowers, the Vanderbilt tight end. 4.51 in the 40, one of the faster times for a tight end.
Yeah, his numbers look very, very similar to Sadiq that we talked about earlier. Just incredible in terms of the testing. A little smaller. He's a fifth-year guy. He's been on three different teams, but can make his way into potentially the first round. At least will be a round two pick, I believe, if he's not taken in round one. So he's not as high of a prospect as Sadiq, but his testing numbers are very similar. The best broad jump ever. Somehow not the best vertical ever for a tight end at 45 and a half inches. Somebody hit 46 inches, but incredible athleticism on top of just very similar to Deke, but still 65 yards per game in his fifth year as a senior. So good production overall, too.
Yeah, probably a bit more of a true receiving tight end as opposed to somebody that's going to get in line at 236 pounds. I mean, that is essentially a big receiver. So from a fantasy standpoint, that's like you got to pay attention to. Is he going to be, well, obviously it depends on draft capital where he's going to go, but is he going to get kind of stuck in that Dalton Kincaid role where he's not a tight end, but he's essentially just a slow, big slot receiver. So you can kind of get caught in tweener mold there. But nevertheless, I mean, if that guy goes in the third round or something like that, that becomes much more of like an interesting sleeper to watch during the process.
Yeah, totally. And he could slip back there. I feel like there is a lot of hype right now just because of the combine. And he's definitely like that clear, like top two tight end. There's not as much tight ends after those two that are really up there. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes. He can be a guy like you were talking earlier, like Sadiq isn't going to slide to a Denver or a San Francisco. Maybe Stowers can.
No question. All right. We are going to take our first quick break. We come back. We're going to talk through some guys who maybe didn't quite have the week that they wanted at the NFL Scouting Combine. We'll get into that right after this. We're back. Again, we're not going to call these guys losers. We're going to talk about the guys here that maybe didn't have the week that they wanted to at the NFL Scouting Combine. Before we throw out some names, I want to talk about a guy, Joel, that people are going to say was a loser, but in my opinion, not really a loser. I think people are overreacting to this. Carnell Tate runs a 4.5 in the 40, and people are freaking out about it. Okay, people are losing their mind online. And Joel, I don't really get it because, number one, a 4.5 is a totally fine time. At his, you know, size, almost 200 pounds, over 6'1", it's not that big of a deal. But I think the reason that people freak out about this, Joel, at least my theory on it, is that I think because he's a vertical receiver, people expected him to rip it in the 40. And that is just misunderstanding what makes guys vertical threats. Like, again, you see him at Ohio State. He's winning downfield. He's making big plays on the vertical routes. So I looked at this, like 250 guys who had 250 or more yards on throws of 20 plus air yards last year. So again, 250 receiving yards on throws of 20 plus air yards. This is the list of guys right here. It's about 21 names. Won't rattle them all off. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see, but the average 40 speed for these guys is 4.46. So these are like deep threats last year. 4.46 was the average 40 time. If you just look at guys who lined up outside on over 2/3 of their snaps, so about 63% of their snaps, they were outside, the average time is 4.49. And Joel, I know you just moved into a new place. When I bought this house that I'm living in now, my wife and I are sending houses back and forth. You know, she's like, hey, here's a house that's, you know, it's like $699,000. She's like, this is a $600,000 house. I'm like, No. That's a $700,000 house. Okay. That's not a six, but it's just like Daniel Jeremiah said this during the broadcast. It's when you see 4.4, you're like, oh, that guy's a 4.4 athlete. The average speed of these guys here that were the most productive downfield outside receivers last year is 4.5. So speed is not the number one thing you need to be a vertical threat. You need to be a good route runner, get off versus press, and win in the contested catch game, which is exactly what Carnell Tate does.
Yeah, his catch rate was insane last year for how far downfield he was consistently targeted. And the top guy up here is Jaxon Smith-Njigba, 4.52. I also was just surprised that we weren't expecting this as much. Like, when everyone was freaking out, I was like, oh, I thought we knew this. Like, I'm a sicko that follows high school recruiting, but his, like, high school recruiting thing was like, right. Oh, he is the slowest five-star receiver ever. We promise he's good. Just don't look at his 40 time. Because in high school, like coming out of high school, I want to say it was like a 4.8 something. And it was like, we know he's not very fast, but we promise he's good. And then he went to Ohio State, and you're like, yeah, we bet he is good. And now look at him. He's going to be a top 10 pick. I wasn't really too worried about this. I saw a great tweet the other day from Scott Barrett where it was the top 30 40 times from the combine since basically the beginning of it. There's been 20 of those 30 that have been drafted early, day one or day two. One of them was a 1,000-yard receiver. So at the hit rate for guys that are running 4.5s is better than the guys that are running like in the 4.2, low 4.3s. So I'm not worried about it. He's still a great receiver. I don't think anything has really changed. So I still love Carnell Tate.
Yeah, that's such a great point. It's like, that whenever they show the fastest 40 list, you're like, how many good players are even on this list? The ability to run at top speed is not what makes you a great receiver. The ability to change speed, decelerate, get into your routes, that's what makes you a great receiver. I think Carnell Tate has all that. It does kind of get into the point of this draft class. It generally feels just like there's a little bit of a lack of pop at the top. Like you said, Carnell Tate, I think you could take him in the top 10 of this draft, but he's not quite at the level of like a Malik Nabers or even Marvin Harrison Jr. coming. I think JSN was probably a better prospect when he came out, and obviously he went in the 20s. So it just is one of those things where this class doesn't necessarily have those super, super stars up at the top, but still, I think Carnell Tate, very good receiver who you could take him. I hope he falls to the Kansas City Chiefs. That would make him a winner in this draft if he gets to go to the 9th overall pick with the Kansas City Chiefs. But give me someone else from this week at the scouting combine that maybe didn't have quite the week they wanted.
The big name is Emmett Johnson out of Nebraska, running back. I do want to say props to him. He did every single test. So he could have just ran the 40, not had the greatest time and be like, I'm done. I don't want to risk it anymore. But he did test and everything. It wasn't the greatest. He is a smaller running back overall. And the big thing we talked about earlier, the running back in the three cones. We talked about the one running back that ran in the three cone. It was Emmett Johnson. He was 29th percentile in terms of RAS score, in terms of all the prospects ever. But when we're looking at just like combine invites, he was actually like bottom 10 percentile in three cone. And if we're breaking down what matters most for a running back at the combine, the number one projected for future success in the NFL is sadly the three cone for running back. So not a great day for Emmett Johnson, who kind of entered as that fringe top five running back prospect. You wonder how much it drops him here.
Nah, yeah, definitely would have been nice for him to have a little bit of a better weekend there. Because as we said, this running back, you know, top five after Jeremiah Love is totally wide open. That definitely hurts his case a little bit there. I'll talk about a guy here that I don't want to totally crush because you can actually look at some other things that he did at the combine and you're maybe a little bit more impressed. But Malachi Fields out of Notre Dame, who we talked about last week, Boone and I, a player that both of us kind of appreciate a little bit. He goes out and runs the 4.6 140. Definitely not what you want to see, even though he's a bigger receiver, 6'4", 218 pounds. The reason I think this is a problem, Joel, is because the thing that I was worried about was his long speed, and he goes and runs the 4.6. Not really what I was kind of worried he might have a slow 40. He goes out and runs the 4.6. I will say, though, to kind of maybe put the different spin on it here for Malachi Fields, 6.98 in the three cone. He actually did run the three cone. He was one of just seven wide receivers that did the three cone. That was faster than Bryce Lance, who everybody's freaking out about, faster than Antonio Williams, who had a nice showing in the 40 at 4.4. Jeremy Bernard, by the way, crushed the three cone. Shout out to him. 6.71. I kind of like me some Jeremy Bernard a little bit as like a glue guy, wide receiver three in the league from what I've seen so far. So he's certainly someone to pay attention to. But yeah, that was good for Fields. Also, in the gauntlet, Malachi Fields, despite running the 4.640, had the one of the faster miles per hour, I think 19 miles per hour in the gauntlet drill. So he also dropped a couple passes, which was disappointing. So I would say a mixed result this weekend for Malachi Fields.
Yeah, he was just running as fast as possible in the gauntlet and not caring about the balls.
Literally.
But no. I wasn't too worried. Same kind of thing. Like a little bit worse than Carnell Tate's 40 time. 4.61 is a pretty big difference from a 4.53. He did say that he's going to run again at his pro day. I don't know if you saw that. And he was very confident that he's going to get into the 4.5s and a good 4.5 time. So we'll see if that happens as pro day. Sometimes 40 times are a little easier at your pro day, if you know what I mean. But I care more about his Senior Bowl. He had such a great Senior Bowl week. He was kind of the rave of it, making his way into day two. I don't know if you'll think he gets into day two with your wide receiver expertise. But yeah, not the greatest combine, but maybe a little bit over-exaggerated in terms of how bad it was.
Oh, I actually think day two would be perfect for him. I thought he was like a third round pick coming into this. I saw, you know, he started to get in like the first round of some mainstream mock drafts. Like, ooh, that's a little much for Malachi Fields. But I certainly think a third round player is kind of where I'm going to come down on with him, because I do think he's a good receiver who runs routes well. It's funny, actually, the player that he sort of got some comparisons to because he ran the slow 40 but had the fast gauntlet was Keon Coleman. Remember a couple of years ago he got that? And I'm like, well, yeah, this is like Keon Coleman, except he actually works hard and is a technician, which actually that sounds like a pretty cool player to me. So I would take Malachi Fields in like the third round range based on what I've seen so far, but definitely could have helped his stock and then helped his draft capital had he gone out there and ran like a 4.4 or something like that. Okay, give me another guy that maybe didn't have quite the weekend that he wanted.
It's one of those fringe lower top 10 running backs, and that'd be Jamari Taylor out of Virginia. Didn't do too much testing. It was kind of the opposite of Emma Johnson, but what he did test in, it wasn't the greatest. He's another one of those smaller running backs. And if you're a smaller running back, you want to test really high in terms of the vertical, broad, those explosive ones, and then just running. He didn't run the 40, but he did do the broad jump and the vertical jump. Neither were too great, below 50th percentile in that broad jump compared to just everyone, not just those combine invites. So be lower than that. So not great for a guy that's going to be that day three running back. It kind of puts him more so in that cemented backup territory.
Yeah, just that's going to happen to a lot of these guys, man. It's going to be so interesting to flip through the running back rankings and just where they might project for this entire class, which is very, very up in the air. Just two quick notes on two final wide receivers here before we get to the news and nuggets coming out of Indianapolis. One, Denzel Boston didn't run the 40, which I thought was disappointing. I would have liked to see. That makes me wonder, like, what is the 40 time for a guy like him? Because I think if he had gone out there and run sub 4.5, he could have really helped himself at 6.4, 2.12. That would have been huge for him. Doesn't run the 40, which I thought was disappointing. And then he struggled in the gauntlet as well, which is, again, disappointing because good hands on tape. So it's definitely somebody that I've thrown the Bud Light Mike Evans comparison out there. You know, Mike Evans obviously was a really explosive prospect. We're still hoping to get some data on Denzel Boston in that regard. And lastly, won't get into this too much, but Jordan Tyson, the bench press number was good. That's great, even if the reps were questionable. But the problem for him, no testing. Medicals are a big question for Tyson, and I think that's just going to – that is a conversation that is not going to stop based on some of what we've learned the last few weeks. So that is a process here for the rest of the draft cycle to get into. Let's get into some news here, Joel, because we actually have a lot to get through here, some It's a little mix of actual news and some rumors that we're hearing at this point. Let's start with the trade that happened yesterday. Monday morning, we got our first fantasy relevant trade. The Lions agreed with the Texans to trade David Montgomery to Houston. They get back Juice Scruggs, a fourth round pick, and a seventh round pick. What's your reaction to David Montgomery leaving Detroit and going to Houston?
The big thing is Jahmyr Gibbs is the overall RB1. That's the question right now in terms of fantasy. It makes a lot of sense. He had three games last year, so David Montgomery didn't really miss much time this year. 2024, he had three games without Montgomery completely, and he averaged 32 points per game in PPR leagues. So that's why it's like the obvious, like, oh, yeah, he's probably going to be the overall RB1 if Montgomery's gone. And the biggest comment that I got on socials when kind of like posing that question is, well, they're going to do something. Like, they're going to draft another running back. They're going to sign another running back. But my pushback on that is like, yeah, totally. They're going to. But is it going to be David Montgomery's role? He had 43% of the touches to start the year, and he was still getting the entire year over half of the goal line carries compared to Jahmyr Gibbs. And those are so valuable in terms of his touches. And in the past, when David Montgomery wasn't playing, yes, they had other running backs fill in, but Jahmyr Gibbs was getting the goal line carries and his touches were up. So in the second half of the year, when Dan Campbell took over the play calling, his touches went way up. Jahmyr Gibbs, it was at 57%, Montgomery like at 43%. And then Campbell started calling plays. And that was a 69-31 split between those two. His targets nearly doubled. His points per game went from 18, which is really good, to 24.6 in PPR leagues. Like, that would be RB1 overall level. So that was with Montgomery still, just a bump in touches. If we're looking like bell cow guys, it's usually 75% of the RB touches is like the Saquons, your Ashton Jensen's, the guys that are like the bell cows in the NFL last year, around 75%. So 69%. Is plenty for Jahmyr Gibbs. And with Monty gone, I don't think it'll really go below that with whoever they sign. I think it'll stay closer to that 65 to 70% range, which would be just amazing for Jahmyr Gibbs. Like, he was averaging 24.6 with 39% of their goal line carries. So if you give him more of those goal line carries, you keep those touches high. Like, that's where the ceiling is just insane.
Totally agree. I think it's a competition between him and Bijan Robinson. Robinson also probably is, you know, going to have Tyler Allgeier walk out the door here in the next week because he is an upcoming free agent. So he's kind of getting both these guys drafted same year. They're getting a similar bump here with the guy who was there before them. Kind of, well, Gibbs and Montgomery came in the same year, but the guy that was sharing the backfield with them moving along here. So it's a good competition, I think, between those two guys. Lions probably have a better offensive ecosystem. You could break ties in favor that way. I would just say too, like, pretty clear that this was a, even though he might have had a tweet that sort of refuted this, pretty clear that this was a David Montgomery driven decision. Brad Holmes, the general manager, framed it that way, both at the end of season presser and at the NFL scouting combine. And I get it. Like, I remember Joel talking to David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs at the Super Bowl last year. And he very much, David Montgomery, viewed these guys as co-starters, equals in the backfield. But as you pointed out, that's not how the team treated them this year. So I understand Montgomery wanting to move on. What's your read on Montgomery with the Texans? I think it's a pretty, you know, fourth round pick at this point is a pretty big price to pay for a running back plus extras. I kind of think the Broncos were involved in trying to trade for David Montgomery. So that's why the Texans had to bump the asking price there. What's your read on Montgomery with a Houston team that ranks 31st in rushing success rate since they drafted CJ Stroud?
Yeah, it's kind of two sides of a different coin. We're looking at Montgomery. His volume was 37th in his expected points per game. So that's hopefully going to be better in Houston if it kind of stays close to what they have of just him and Woody Marks as that main two. And we look at Chicago. He was the RB8, the RB15, and the RB28. So kind of in that RB2 range when we're combining those 3 years of him being the RB1. So that all is better than Detroit. However, his efficiency wasn't good in Detroit this past year. It dropped off dramatically, and that was with the Lions' offensive line. Houston's offensive line ranked 30th in terms of their run blocking. That is a big drop off. Hopefully they fix that a little bit, but we saw it affect Woody Marks a bunch. Woody Marks' efficiency was also very low. That offensive line did not help him. Marks was not a good goal line back. One touchdown on 9 attempts. So you're hoping that Montgomery kind of keeps that role that he had in Troy. Like, that would be pretty expected. It'll depend on how much Montgomery actually gets in his volume. If it is like a 50-50 split, then it's a downgrade. I think he still is a lot better than Woody Marks, but at the same time, he's 29, just had a bad year, switching teams, not as good of a situation. A lot is up in the air. I wouldn't reach for him, that's for sure right now, but I do think at least the ceiling, his opportunity there is a lot better than if he just stayed as the 1B, and that's kind of being nice, is saying he's the 1B in Detroit.
No question. Yeah, I think he's going to get a shot here to be the lead back. I think he's still got at least one more good year left in him. And the Texans do need a grinder back here, which is certainly what Montgomery is at this stage of his career. Let's go to a team in New York that has a grinder back that might be in a little bit of trouble from a fantasy standpoint. I tweeted about this yesterday because I don't think this has been talked about enough in fantasy circles. SNY's Connor Hughes reports that the Giants are, quote, heavily involved in the running back market, and implied that Kenneth Walker is one of the names that they are really interested in. I just don't think this has been talked about enough, Joel, because, again, like when it gets brought up, oh, the Giants, they've got a good young core, Cam Scataboo starting running back. They're not committed to Cam Scataboo as the starting running back. They're clearly new staff, new coaches here, kicking around running backs to add here, and Kenneth Walker being the name. I just think there's so much smoke around this. This was a big talking point in Indianapolis as well. I would kind of be surprised if the Giants don't have, maybe it's not Walker, but they don't have another name added in the running back mix.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. If it is Walker, it's a very similar situation to Seattle. There is some positive that I'll get into with New York that maybe isn't very surface level right now, but he'd be going back to Seattle, have Zach Charbonnet coming off the ACL tear, maybe some more work early on in the season, and a similar type of hope in terms of his fantasy season ceiling. But if he goes to the Giants, he kind of has that same thing with Scataboo, where Scataboo coming off a pretty serious injury that we've seen some running backs in the past, or just players in general, kind of come back from similar injuries, and it takes them sometimes a full season to like at least be back to as good as they were. And I was kind of surprised how high Scataboo was going in some like these best ball drafts, these early drafts. So I think it's not the worst situation for Walker, even though I would like him somewhere else. If he was in New York, I think he'd be over Scataboo, with Scataboo slowly coming back more and more throughout the season, the more work that they want to give him. But we're looking at Baltimore last year. They were 7th in running back points with Derrick Henry. Obviously, that wasn't much of a split, but their offense wasn't as good. They were 16th. In total offense, and still 7th in running back points. And Dart isn't bad for running backs at all. The design runs help them a little bit. Lots of goal line carries for Scataboo last year. The offense in general, 13th. They were actually better than Baltimore last year, just comparing total offenses. So I know Lamar wasn't healthy the whole season, but compared to what Derrick Henry, when they were 7th in points last year, was, Giants would actually be a better offense in total. So there's that, along with Jackson Dart throwing to running backs a decent bit. We saw Scataboo get some targets. It was an 18% target share for running backs, which would be top 12.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head there with like the goal line carries with Scataboo are kind of masking or like overinflating his fantasy totals versus the actual running game in New York. So this is obviously small sample size, but that's what we have to do when a guy gets hurt. You don't know what's going to happen over the rest of the season. But weeks 3 to 7. So when he was handling heavy volume prior to the injury in week 8, the Giants were 18th in EPA per running back rush, 21st in yards per running back rush, yards per carry per running back rush, 26th in yards after contact, and 18th in success rate. They just happened to be 4th in running back runs at that time because they were just running the ball a ton with Dart and kind of that RPO offense. So I don't know if it's the best use of resources for the Giants to be adding a big name running back when they have other needs. That's kind of bizarre. But again, nevertheless, it does seem like this is something that at least is going to happen here. I'm going to throw another one here. I'd say at this point, Joel, I don't know if it's going to happen before June 1st, but I think it's more likely than not that AJ Brown is not on the Eagles roster this year, and that they are headed for a divorce. And I mentioned last week some of the, you know, kind of mixed comments from Howie Roseman and Nick Sirianni. The thing that now really makes me feel that he's not going to be there is that you've started to see multiple reporters that cover the team, or, you know, people you talk to, saying like, this team is really convinced that Devontae Smith can be a number one wide receiver, that he can be a lead guy in a passing game. He can be the alpha here. And you know what? I agree with them. Like, I think Devontae Smith could be that guy if given the opportunity. And it kind of reminds me a little bit, obviously, Devontae Smith's been in the league longer, but it does kind of remind me a little bit of last year when the Seahawks decided, hey, JSN's on the come up and, you know, DK Metcalf has kind of plateaued. Like, why won't we not just get the older guy out of here and promote the younger guy to the number one wide receiver spot? It kind of reminds me of that, especially as they are bringing in Sean Mannion off this Green Bay tree, where they're going to be more condensed formations and stuff like that, which I think Devontae Smith could cook in that type of offense here.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the play calling change. That can be definitely a big part of it. The report, I've seen a report or two that is saying the Eagles are asking for like way too much on AJ Brown. So you wonder if that changes the longer that we get into the offseason and they like start asking for a little bit less and a little bit less to actually see that change. But I wouldn't be shocked at all for AJ Brown leaving. I don't think it's necessarily a good thing for AJ Brown. If they change up the offense in the Eagles, Jalen Hurts is still a good quarterback for fantasy receivers in terms of his catchable balls, the amount of points that the Eagles should be scoring with an offense that they had, or at least what they were like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, taking out last year. I still think the better scenario for AJ Brown in the fantasy sense would be staying in Philadelphia. But if he does leave, like, yeah, Devontae Smith shoots up there. And depending on the landing spot for AJ Brown, he still obviously is a very talented player.
Last one here that we'll get into before we get out of here. I've kicked, you know, we talked about it a ton. Vikings quarterback situation last week. Now it kind of just sounds like it's straight up over for JJ McCarthy in Minnesota for 2026 at least. You know, I kind of thought, hey, maybe they'll bring in like a Marcus Mariota type veteran and say, oh, it's a competition between these two guys, or, you know, Anthony Richardson can compete with JJ McCarthy. I kind of think it's over between the player and the team. This quote from Jeremy Fowler on the Dan Patrick show, Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, of course, quote, it's kind of like when you get broken up with or somebody starts seeing other people. When they do that, it's clear it's probably over. That's what Fowler said to Dan Patrick. He also threw out that their tier one options would be Kyler Murray, who could be had for close to a minimum salary if released by the Cardinals, and Geno Smith. So again, because everybody's gotten to weigh in on this at this point, who is your favorite addition from a quarterback standpoint for the Minnesota Vikings this offseason?
I think for Justin Jefferson's fantasy sake, as the focal point, I would say Kyler Murray still. I know it hasn't been great recently, but there was like a good history in the past. Like, we look back, like DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver one season with him. And just the system, I think they can still build around him. Like, whoever it is, the top two options are Geno and Kyler Murray. If it's one of those two, I think these guys will still be underdrafted just based on the perception of the recent history with Geno last year, Kyler last year, last couple of years in this offense. But O'Connell, the talk of the town before this year when J.J. McCarthy was taking over was, oh, this passing offense is always good. O'Connell's offense is always good, which is true. 2022 to 2024, they were second in receiving fantasy points behind only the Bengals, which have, you know, as well, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins there, that helps. But they were number two. This last year, they dropped to 30. That's a pretty big difference. But even if they land somewhere in the middle, I think that's still really good for a guy like Justin Jefferson. Who knows, Hockenson starts doing well again. We don't know about Addison. But for Justin Jefferson's sake, I still think that he'll be underdrafted if it's one of those two guys. And I'd rather just take like the superstar talent there.
Yeah, I think O'Connell just probably works better with veteran quarterbacks at this point. You know, I think that's probably where we're at. I think he got really frustrated very early on with McCarthy limiting the playbook. And Kyler Murray kind of limits the playbook too, just not quite as bad as JJ McCarthy, yeah. Which is kind of why I honestly think, I know, I think Geno might be better from like a fantasy standpoint, because I think they'll throw the ball more and he accesses that middle of the field more. But Kyler certainly wouldn't be bad either from Justin Jefferson's standpoint alone. Also, we won't have to break this down, but just breaking news into the show as we were taping, Bears center Drew Dahlman retired, 27 years old, starting center retired. That's a shocker. So we're definitely going to maybe have to update the, you're already looking, you're looking pretty nervous about this, Joel.
That's not good. That's not good. We've seen lines like that, like even looking at Detroit last year. But they have a really good offensive line in general. There's five guys up front. They were one of the best run blocking offensive lines in the NFL last year. So one guy doesn't ruin it, yeah. But that is a surprise and it's not good. 27 years old, dang.
One of the better zone run blocking centers too. So not a great center class either. This is definitely a big twist in the Chicago Bears offseason. That is for sure. There's some interesting centers available in free agency. Not all of them would fit this offense, but Tyler Linderbaum, big time zone blocking center. So maybe he gets in the mix here, although the Raiders can pretty much and should outbid anybody for Linderbaum, Chargers as well. All right, Joel. Appreciate you, man. I know we had some technical difficulties on the show here, but you killed it as always. I appreciate you for just tracking all these 40 times, man. Even if the combine is cooked, even if the combine is cooked, you are not cooked. You are a winner from this weekend. I'll tell you that.
Thank you. That's all that I care about is not being cooked.
It comes for all of us, pal. Someday you'll be as old as me and you will officially be cooked. But until then, this show will be back on Thursday as we officially have our first free agency preview podcast. Ian Harditz, yes, the mayor of Fantasy Twitter himself. He is going to be here to wish cast the top free agency landing spots for fantasy. That is going to be live on Thursday here at 2 p.m. Eastern. Until then, we are out.